Well, hey there, come on in. We're just about to start. Welcome to My Wife the Dietitian, a fun weekly podcast about nutrition and healthy lifestyle. I'm Rob, and together with my wife Sandra, we invite you to join us on this informative and entertaining journey through the complex world of healthy eating.
Join us each week as we strive to help you with transforming your overall health and relationship with food through up-to-date, evidence-based nutrition information. With increasing rates of diabetes, people wonder, is there something I can do to help prevent diabetes? Or how can I help control my blood sugars if I already have diabetes? Well, today, we'll talk to dietitian Tara Rood, the diabetes dietitian, to get all the facts.
It seems like it's like just been a steady increase of people being diagnosed and more people having it. And I think earlier, like we kind of traditionally, type 2 diabetes was like later in life, like after, you know, 50 or so. And now you're seeing that in 20s, 30s. I mean, seeing it in kids even, it's getting diagnosed so much earlier. And a lot of it is from lifestyle. Yeah, much more of the convenience, the process, the packaged foods, higher sugar content in general. And for kids, a lot of that comes from sugary drinks. But even as adults, you know, like the Frappuccinos, the lattes, all those things, sugary drinks add up. And inactivity, I mean, across the board, we're just more sedentary, right? We sit at work, we sit at home, we're doing video games, been watching Netflix. So I think all of those things add up to like the perfect storm for diabetes.
Enjoying the show? You can help others find it and enjoy it too by giving us a 5-star rating or review. If you feel like reaching out to us with a question or comment, you can send us an email at mywifetherd@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our website at mywifethedietitian.com, as well as our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Enjoy the show. Welcome to My Wife the Dietitian. Hello, Sandra.
Hey, Rob.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Good. Today we're talking to Tara Rood, the diabetes dietitian.
Oh, yes.
That's her website, actually, thediabetesdietitian.org.
Right.
Which is awesome because she's been in the field helping people with diabetes for over 15 years.
So she would probably know what she's talking about.
Thousands of clients.
Super helpful.
Said. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping to learn something on this one.
Oh, yeah. I think we all will. I think it's just, it is such a big growing condition that we hear about.
It is. And it's becoming like younger, right? Like you're getting children with
type 2 diabetes.
With type 2 diabetes, yeah. Which is like lifestyle and diet related, right?
Yeah, it's more related to the lifestyle and diet.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's scary. So yeah, it'll be interesting kind of hearing her tips and ideas and just learning all about diabetes today.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good because we talk all about how to, you know, just make some healthy balanced meals and snacks and some lifestyle changes to help with your managing your blood sugars.
Exactly.
And helping to prevent diabetes in the first place. If you have been diagnosed with prediabetes or borderline is another term that you hear. And then also people living with diabetes, it is controllable and you can do something with your health to help.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's go find Tara and pick her brain and learn all about diabetes.
Well, we're here with Tara Rood, dietitian, the diabetes dietitian. And Tara, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell our listeners who you are and what you do in your work?
Yeah, I'm Tara Rood. I'm a registered dietitian and a certified diabetes care and education specialist with it. It's such a mouthful, but basically specialize in diabetes education.
Right, that's awesome.
So I was looking at your website. It's amazing. You've got so many great ideas on there, and it looks like you've been working with clients for over a decade, and you have different group coaching that you offer online, balanced blood sugar group, and you help people help with their A1C and just help control their blood sugar spikes, like if they have diabetes. And do you work with people with pre-diabetes or borderline diabetes, is a term that I hear from some clients. They say, oh, my doctor says I have borderline diabetes. And it's like, well, it's like pregnancy. You either have it or you don't.
Right.
Is that
yeah,
true?
So true.
No, do you hear that
is,
a lot?
That is true. I think it's true. Yes. But yeah, I do see people with pre-diabetes as well. I mean, there is a technical diagnosis of that pre-stages, but it's kind of like if you don't make the changes now, right, you're going to definitely have type 2 diabetes in the near future. So, but I see pre-diabetes and type 2 and actually some gestational diabetes as well.
So is pre-diabetes just sort of a state that sort of will lead to diabetes if you don't do something about it, like certain symptoms that are present? Okay.
Yeah. The tough part with pre-diabetes is that a lot of times you feel totally fine and you're in this like pre-stages where you don't feel anything really, but the sugars might be a little bit elevated. So sometimes I think it's not taken quite as seriously because you don't feel any effects from it.
Right.
But it definitely is one of those times that, yeah, if you can make changes when you're first diagnosed as pre-diabetic, it could prevent diabetes altogether or delay it significantly.
And what are the symptoms, I guess, of pre-diabetes? Like what are they looking at? Just the blood sugar levels or is it?
It's just blood sugar levels, really. Sometimes, you know, people might go to the doctor and this is pretty much the same for diabetes itself. It's like fatigue, feeling really thirsty, kind of like no energy, going to the bathroom all the time might be an indication like blood sugars are a little elevated. But honestly, in the pre-stages, it's usually just at a physical. You would notice it like when the blood sugars come back, the labs. Yeah.
Okay. And then you would take that information and make some changes so that you don't develop into full-blown diabetes, I guess. Is that kind of what's next?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I'm a newbie for this, so I'm just getting caught up with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And there's a huge family history component to diabetes. So I think it's around 50% of people who have, you know, if you have a family history, you're 50% more likely to develop diabetes than someone who doesn't. So those people, when they're in that pre-diabetes, but then they also have this long family history of diabetes, it's even more important to then start making changes when first diagnosed or first find out even blood sugars are elevated to really delay the onset of diabetes.
Right. And can you explain quickly the difference between type 1 and type 2? Is that kind of, are we talking about one or the other here? Are they kind of similar or?
I mean, they're not really similar now, but it's similar as far as you have to watch blood sugars.
Sure.
But type 2 diabetes is going to be more of the family history, more lifestyle goes into it. So being overweight, inactive, eating habits fall into causing type 2 diabetes with insulin resistance. And then with type 1, it's actually an autoimmune disorder. So your pancreas actually just stops making insulin altogether. It used to be considered like the juvenile diabetes. And a lot of times you were under 30 years old when you got diagnosed with type 1. But that has actually evolved and you can get diagnosed at any point in your life now. But you'll be on insulin and then you control blood sugars with insulin.
Like with injecting. Like daily injections, like shooting yourself in the arm with a needle, right? Yeah, I remember going to school with kids like that. It's like, it was kind of, not pleasant for
them. It's evolved a lot, Rob, since that
35, 40
years ago, like the different, insulin and everything is.
Yeah, there's like pumps now that you can wear and it's definitely evolved quite a bit. Yeah.
And
with the type 1, you're on insulin, you're on it for the rest of your life because now you can't survive without it.
And type 2, I'm guessing, is maybe more prevalent?
More prevalent, yeah. I would say, I think it's like the stat is around 80 or 85% of people, especially in the United States, have type 2 diabetes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that's what we're going to talk about today, right? Is all the lifestyle diet stuff related to type 2.
Yeah, I focus mostly in like my group coaching program is focused on type 2 diabetes. That's mostly where I focus my work. Not that I couldn't see someone who has type 1, but that's where I focus the most at.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to get all that kind of out of the way so that everyone, including myself, sort of understands what's coming next. And so you have some questions now, Sandra. I'll turn it over to you.
Oh, yeah, no worries. Oh, this is good. I'm glad you asked. That's great. Tara is the expert, so I'm glad we talked about it with her. So, one question I have, and I guess it's more related to pre-diabetes, but it's actually with diabetes too. So can an individual that has pre-diabetes or has diabetes or their blood sugars aren't well controlled, can they improve their health with lifestyle and diet?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, especially, I mean, I think at any point, even if you, whether you're pre-diabetic or you've had diabetes like 2 years or 20 years, lifestyle changes can make a huge difference. And a lot of it is just being able to manage like the blood sugars day to day and get more of a balance in there so you're not having big swings in blood sugars. And then the pre-stages, like with pre-diabetes, it could be, like I said, preventing type 2 altogether.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That makes
How does
sense.
Someone monitor that on their kind of day-to-day? Do they have a blood sugar monitor or they just kind of go by how they feel or?
Yeah, it kind of depends on your doctor, what they want you to do. Usually from most people that I see who are pre-diabetic aren't monitoring every day, but they're checking in every 3 months and having like a new A1C drawn to kind of see where they're at or having their fasting blood sugar drawn. Some of them, it's just at a yearly physical when you're pre. Now, once you have type 2 diabetes, checking every day is recommended. Whether that's with a monitor, blood sugar monitor, or the continuous glucose monitor, you can actually attach it right to your arm and it scans your blood sugar. I think it's like every 15 seconds or something. It's very cool.
Crazy. People must get addicted to those things. I've got one of those of those watches that tells you everything. And Sandra says, I decide how I'm feeling based on what my watch says. But imagine having one of those things going, oh, look what I just ate. Look at my monitor's saying now. And crazy.
Yeah, very helpful for making those lifestyle changes, I think, because you can see it. Like, so you can go for a walk and see blood sugars come down. You can see, when you had pasta dinner, how high they go up versus, when you have to poke your finger and check your blood sugar.
True.
You may not do that as frequently as this would catch. So it's very handy for making changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I know there's just if we rewind a little bit, I think Rob probably has a question about what could you explain to the listeners and to Rob what hemoglobin A1C stands for and what it means?
Yeah. So your hemoglobin A1C is your average blood sugars over a 3 month period. So when you check with like a meter, you're checking right then in that snapshot in that moment. And this A1C is going to catch all the times in between when you might be testing. It actually measures the sugar that is attached to your red blood cells and they rejuvenate in your body about every 3 months. So it gives you like an average of where it is.
Oh, interesting.
So type 2 diabetes is diagnosed at an A1C of 6.4 or higher. And then pre-stages is like 5.7 to 6.3. It would be kind of like pre-diabetes.
And that's on your blood. That's something that you typically get checked, like when you get your blood work done, right?
Yeah, this would be on an annual physical. And then once you have it elevated, then that's where they might have you come back every sometimes three to six months to have it checked to see where it's at.
Right.
A lot of the clients that I see, Rob, sorry, just I want to interject here because this is exactly what happens is not that I specialize in diabetes, but I do get some clients with diabetes. And that is one of the things is the doctor says, oh, can you go see a dietitian? And then we start working together. And so we have a baseline hemoglobin A1C and then working together. And then in 3 months, they get another one. And usually what we see, because they're working with a dietitian, they will see that their hemoglobin A1C has come down. And a lot of times their cholesterol levels have come down, their blood pressure level, and usually their weight has changed a little bit to be improved. So, all these things are helped with the dietitian's coaching and just information to help people in their day-to-day living to help their health. So I'm glad you mentioned about the blood work because it is like 3 to 6 months later. And I usually talking to clients, like if they're eating like the three meals a day and snacks between, and they're keeping things pretty stable, then we know that the hemoglobin A1C will be improved. Like we just, it's just obvious almost, right? Because the evidence is there. We've seen it repeated over and over and over again. So it's kind of cool to see how definitely diet and what you're eating and your lifestyle can have a huge impact. And yeah, I love to see that you're working with this client group and you see it, like you've said on your website, thousands of patients and clients over the years, eh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I used to, before I started my own private practice, I worked as a diabetes program manager at a hospital outpatient clinic. And so we saw tons of patients. Yeah. And it's very rewarding to be able to help them make changes. And then, like you said, see it in 3 months, see the A1C come down, see those lab results come down, see people lose weight. Everybody gets excited. And that's like the best part of my job, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh my
same
God,
results.
I know. It's, well, yeah, yeah. It's like so awesome for people because they, I think a lot of people just think, oh, I'm predestined. My parents had it and my grandparents had it. And they just think, oh, I can't do anything about it, but you can, like there is hope and there is things you can do in your lifestyle and your diet. And it's so exciting because it really can delay other problems like kidney disease, and it can delay possibly dementia. Like there's so many powerful, you know, impacts to your long-term health when you get your blood sugars under control. Cause it's diabetes is like just escalating like crazy in our North American lifestyle, eh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people with diabetes. Yes.
When you first started as a dietitian helping people with diabetes and like now, have you seen like numbers increasing or have you noticed that I have personally, like after 25 years, but I don't know, like what are you seeing?
Yeah, same. Like, yeah, it seems like it's like just been a steady increase of people being diagnosed and more people having it. And I think earlier, like we kind of traditionally type 2 diabetes was like later in life, like after, you know, 50 or so. And now you're seeing that in 20s, 30s. I mean, seeing it in kids even, it's getting diagnosed so much earlier. And a lot of it is from lifestyle.
When you say kids, you mean it's not like they don't have type 1 diabetes, like juvenile diabetes. They're getting, their kids are developing type 2 diabetes.
Yes. 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 So as a dietitian, it's kind of surprising to see it, I think.
Yeah. And like kids, especially, I know, I think we've mentioned this before on a few different episodes we've done, but it's obviously diet, lifestyle obviously is a big one. Are there certain factors that contribute as far as lifestyle and, you know, ultra processed food and sugary drinks and all that? I'm guessing as far as the diet, but what are kind of the factors?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it is like, much more of the convenience, the process, the packaged foods, higher sugar content in general. And for kids, a lot of that comes from sugary drinks. But even as adults, you know, like the Frappuccinos, the lattes, all those things, sugary drinks add up. And inactivity, I mean, across the board, we're just more sedentary, right? We sit at work, we sit at home, we're doing video games, been watching Netflix. So I think all of those things add up to like the perfect storm for diabetes.
And smoking, I think, is part of it too, is it?
Mm-hmm. Smoking is part of it, yeah. And so smoking is a huge risk factor.
The obesity, I guess, is another sign or factor? Right.
Yeah, obesity kind of goes right along with the lifestyle changes, right? So higher processed food, less activity, more likely to you know, carry around more weight. And then that does increase the risk for diabetes. And then if you have that family history and then you're also overweight, inactive, eating a highly processed food diet, it leads to maybe even being diagnosed earlier in life.
Mm-hmm. So you can see those are obviously things that can be changed, right? I mean, you know,
right. Yeah.
Changing your diet, changing your exercise routine. And that's great that you guys are able to have an effect on people that are suffering from that stuff.
Yeah. And I think when they're first diagnosed that, you know, and they are sent to a dietitian and I'm sure you experienced this as well, like they almost have a little bit where they don't want to come because they do think we're the food police. Like we're not, we're going to just give you a list of stuff you cannot eat anymore. So I really try to focus more on there isn't anything that I would say you can never have this again, but what can we add to your plate? Let's get more fruits and vegetables in there, whole grains, more fiber versus like, you know, I think people then are afraid to come and then hear like, oh, I can never have all my favorite foods again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like being sent to the principal's office and they're going to be scolded.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
I've been bad. I don't want to be the principal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. That's right. And when going back a little bit, when you were talking about just inactivity and having a sedentary lifestyle, and people that have their blood glucose monitors, like especially if it's the continuing one, like the one that's attached to them, they'll notice that like just walking after a meal or like doing a little bit of activity after a meal, you see your blood sugar come right down because it goes right into the cells. Mm-hmm. And it's like such a huge part of like blood sugar management is trying to get active, like, or at least getting up and moving after eating.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's motivating. You're right to see that. So sometimes I'm like, can you get a continuous glucose monitor so you can start to see these changes? Because it does help motivate people to get up and get moving.
Yeah. It's nice to have those instant results that you can sort of make your decisions according to those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell me if there is some diabetic friendly, and I don't like that term necessarily, but foods that are more, I mean, people with diabetes eat everything that everybody eats. And I wonder if there's like certain snacks or meals that that you help your clients with to help with their blood sugar control.
Yeah, I focus a lot more on like looking at balancing. That's why I have the Balanced Blood Sugar Coaching Group. But looking at, okay, if you're going to eat a snack or a meal, what would you usually have? And then how can we balance that out to make sure that there is something with fiber. So whether that's, you know, vegetables on the plate or vegetables with a snack, something with carbs. So you'd still want carbs. I think sometimes that's a misconception too, thinking like you don't want to have any carbs. So have carbs at the meal, protein and fat. So more kind of looking at like, what can we add to instead of like, you know, like take food away.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense. And I love the message that, carbs definitely do fit and they should be paired with something. So instead of just eating some toast, maybe have peanut butter on the toast or have an egg with the toast or, you know, have the carb with something so that it helps with the blood sugar rise and it helps get that balance in the meal so that you're getting some fiber, like you said, some protein, some, you know, a little bit of fat, like all that is important for the balance of your meal or your snack. So I love that.
Yeah, you feel more satisfied, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, it's hard for people because I think they, you know, all the different diet trends and all the information online, and it's like, oh, I got to restrict. And I often go back to like, okay, if you think of a plate, you know, the plate ratio, and so you want to have like a good, healthy, balanced meal has like three different components on it. So that includes the protein, it includes the vegetable, includes the whole grain starch, like hopefully higher in fiber, if it's got the skin on the potato or the sweet potato, or if it's like a brown rice or a whole grain rice or quinoa or something that has more fiber, that all helps with blood sugar, like to keep the blood sugars not from rising too quickly, like the whole, you know, the high glycemic index foods that people now, I guess, with their continuous blood sugar monitor can really see, you know, like if you eat an ultra processed, like something like a cold cereal
a big gulp.
Yeah. Let's go there. That's good. They'll see their blood sugar should really spike up or
you can really see it. So I wouldn't say like there's any like, you know, as far as like diabetic friendly foods, you can make a lot of things like, you know, friendly fit into the meal plan, even with like some of that, you know, like if you really wanted to have a big gulp, for instance, could we do a smaller size? Could you, you know, have a string cheese with it? There's ways you could fit some of this in. It's just probably, you know, less often than people are doing it now and maybe smaller portion sizes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there are small big gulps.
No, I don't think so either. But
they're,
you know,
all massive buckets.
It's like a mini. Is there a mini gulp?
Yeah, exactly. I love Cara's approach though, because that's the thing. You got to meet people where they're at. Otherwise, they will basically leave your office and say, "Screw that! I'm not changing. I can't.
Yeah. This is too hard.
Yeah, and our whole job and what we want to help people with is like make those small changes so they're sustainable for the long-term health, you know? And if that means like, if they're having a big gulp or two a day, if they can have like a little bit less and just try to do it less often, like you said, exactly, less often, smaller amounts, and then increasing the good things, like have some, maybe a little bit of vegetable at lunch, which is probably not something, like a lot of people don't eat vegetables at lunch, I notice.
Yeah. And I'd say.
And as a dietitian, I mean, when you're working with people, this is what you do, is you see what they're doing and then you make little subtle changes and then you celebrate the wins after a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Like when you see them again, it's like, oh, look, you're doing this. This is different than when you first came to see me. And then eventually they go back to their doctor and they get their blood work done and wow, look at this. Your hemoglobin A1C is in a normal range now. So this is like really going to help the long-term health and of your kidneys, of all your organ systems, of your microcapillaries, you know, in your body. Like this is really important for your overall health. So I love that. Like I love that your approach is, you know, small changes and, you know, so they're sustainable. And that's what I'm hearing anyways.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And I think like with diabetes, like you're going to follow this for the rest of your life, because if you come off of it at any point, blood sugars go back up. So it has to be sustainable. You have to feel like, you know, I can have dessert, I can have birthday cake, I can enjoy Thanksgiving dinner, whatever it is, it has to feel like you can do those things too, maybe with just some small modifications. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do this for the rest of your life.
So if someone is at the pre-diabetes stage, you sort of start steering them in the same direction you would if they were full-blown diabetes, and then just kind of hope that things don't change. But maybe they don't have to be as strict because they don't have the full-blown diabetes yet. And is that sort of how, like, it's the same diet basically is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, it's the same. I honestly encourage people even in pre-diabetes to just start following the same concept, the same meal plan. Yes, maybe you don't have to be quite as strict, but I kind of feel like you should just start doing it now and start getting active
healthy
now. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's all positive changes everyone should make anyway, but they have more of a reason to, I guess.
Right. Yeah. A little more motivated.
We often say on this, like just from in terms of like the different diets out there, and people are always like, what diet should I be on? And diabetes diet. And it's like, guess what? You know, a diet only works when you're on the diet. So let's make some lifestyle changes. And so this is like for the long term. So it's more of a holistic approach and not so focused on restriction and limitations and, you know, all that, because that is not sustainable. People cannot live like that on a restricted kind of mindset. So I think I'm glad you are helping people to, you know, make those changes in a way that works for them from where they're starting at. Like that is like, I think, real key for the whole equation, right?
Yeah, I think so too. For people to be able to stick with something. And like, I almost like dislike the term diet so much. I know it's like part of the dietitian name too, but because people associate diet with just a short-term thing, you're going to get results and then you go back to how you're eating, when this is truthfully like a lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah. For sure. I totally agree with you that. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's awesome. There's a question we ask all of our guests. Unless, Rob, do you have any other questions?
Did we talk about snacks? Was I not paying attention when you guys were talking about snacks, or did we just not talk about snacks?
Oh, you eating a snack when... No, I'm just kidding.
I could have been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what's going on? What's your question, Rob?
Well, were we going to ask about some like diabetic friendly snacks?
Sure.
Are there such a thing?
What's your question?
What are some diabetic friendly snacks? How's that?
To help
Good,
balance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I like to have people do like, honestly, like a carb and a protein or a carb and a, like a fat or something like that for snacks. So like my favorite ones that I give people is like a Greek yogurt could be a good snack. Like fruit, like maybe those cutie oranges with string cheese, or a small apple with a handful of nuts or a tablespoon of peanut butter, veggies cut up with hummus, and then even like something like, you know, wheat thins or some whole wheat crackers with a string cheese or a baby bell cheese. So you're kind of getting like that, again, back to that balance of I think for a snack, like two different food groups is nice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This does sound familiar. Maybe we did discuss it, but
yeah, this is
the
great.
The combining
I don't think we did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The combining the two food groups, like you said, is the important part. So you're not just getting all carbs. Is that kind of the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And I think a lot of times people, you know, and I think even, you know, as a dietitian, you gravitate toward, I need a quick snack and it's pretzels and chips and, you know, something out of the pantry where I try to encourage people, okay, what could you grab out of the fridge? Like, what could you put with that? Could you have a fruit, have a vegetable, you know, have a yogurt, something that's not just like a pantry, quick, you know, convenience, more processed food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And unless it's at like nuts or seeds or something like, you know,
that
could be like a trail mix type of thing with some dried fruit. If they're on the move, like if they're out of the house and they didn't have a pack that's got like a refrigerated lunch pack or something, that's also a good one, I think. But like you said, it's good.
I think that's good too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my go-to, the trail mix and the nuts and all that. But I'm also noticing there's a lot more options as far as produce. Like you can buy like little bags of kind of bite-sized broccoli and the little mini carrots and stuff that's ready to eat, which makes it, you know, you just pull it out of the fridge, you pull your hummus out or whatever you're using it with, and it's ready. You don't have to like prep it.
Yeah. It does make it like trying to make it more convenient, right?
Yeah. Or take an afternoon and prep a bunch of stuff and leave it in your fridge. So you've got cut up, you know, veggies ready to go when you want that quick snack. That's always an easy way to do it.
Yeah. It's more work up front, right? To wash the stuff and cut it and have it ready. But then it saves you so much time during the week.
Totally. Yeah. It's just about being organized and having things at your fingertips when you need them.
Yeah.
I often say to clients, anything to make eating vegetables easier is good in my books, right? So if it's a bag salad or if you grab some frozen veggies that you're going to add to your stir fry or soup, you know, any of that is going to help with increasing your intake of vegetables. Because we all know, I mean, that's one thing that dietitians are good at is like, eat your vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. How do we fit more in? Yeah. And even for blood sugar too, right? Like it's going to help fill you up. And most of those non-starchy vegetables, there are all the non-starchy ones actually, they don't raise your blood sugar. So it's like you can add stuff in, you feel more satisfied and you're not getting this spike in blood sugar. So yeah.
Perfect. Win-win.
Did you know that, Rob?
I do now.
Okay. Like, so this is good. I know this is a really good, so this is one question. It wasn't on our list, but, clients are like, well, can I eat corn? Can I eat carrots? Can I eat potatoes? Like anything that's like grown from the ground, like a root vegetable or a starchier vegetable. So where do they fit in?
So your starchy vegetables are going to be more like a carb, like bread, pasta, rice in that category, versus like your non-starchy vegetables, which are going to be, honestly, I tell people they're like a free food because they're high fiber, low calorie. They don't raise your blood sugar. I mean, maybe they would if you ate a lot of them, but you really got to eat a lot of them. So those non-starchy vegetables are going to be like pretty much everything besides like potatoes, sweet potatoes, corn, peas, and like a winter squash, like butternut, acorn squash. Those are going to be like all in the starch category. That's all of them.
So things like leafy greens and peppers, like salad kind of stuff, I'm thinking. Is that sort of what the
broccoli, cauliflower, leafy greens, even carrots are actually in the non-starchy section.
That's a good
peppers
tip.
Onions, mushrooms. Yeah. So you can fill up on those. And those are also like nice if you have your snack even and you feel like I could use another little snack, then go for the vegetables.
Perfect.
Yeah, and something I hear a lot from clients is like, well, all the healthy foods are really expensive. What do I do? Because I can't afford vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you get that too, right? Do you get that?
Yeah. All the time. Yes. Yeah. So I always tell people, I mean, it's looking for like what's on sale at your local grocery store, shopping the coupon section. But for vegetables, especially like frozen is honestly just as good as fresh. And sometimes those are just more budget friendly. So if you can find it frozen without like any sauces or, you know, no added like salt, sugar or anything in there, those are just as good. They're flash froze, like they flash freeze them at the peak freshness of the vegetable. So nutrition-wise, you're still getting all the nutrients. So that could be like an alternative. But yeah, otherwise, you know, looking for what's on sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And farmers markets and like this, what's in season.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, this what's is all season, great for environmentally too, right? Like if you're use frozen, then you're probably not going to be throwing a lot away because they're rotting because you're just using what you need and then you put it back in the freezer. And yeah, no, there's so many benefits with that. And I think also it's sometimes like people aren't ready for change and they're just like, it's overwhelming to even think about starting to eat more vegetables. And it's easy just to say the same thing that they've heard all around is like, they're too expensive. But then you look at, okay, what do you spend your money on? You know, and
exactly.
So tell me, you know, what else are you eating in your day? Like, are you buying those TV dinners or, you know, the packaged food? Because if you do less of that, like if it's like ultra processed, you know, then maybe you do have a little bit more money for vegetables, like frozen vegetables or frozen berries or, you know, something like that. So that you are, there's ways to get more of those whole, good, healthy, high fiber foods in your diet that are going to help with your blood sugars.
Yeah. Prioritizing the vegetables and the fruits and the healthy foods, right? Rather than the boxed stuff.
Yeah. And I think having a plan of like how you're going to use them in the week, right? So if I'm going to buy broccoli, I have a plan. I'm going to cut it up and have it for a snack. I'm going to steam it and have it for dinner. Because I think too, people buy vegetables and then they just sit in the fridge because they don't cut them up. That, you know, having them again back to like prepared, ready to go, you're much more likely to eat them and then they won't go bad.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. No, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think it's hard. Like, it's the vegetable message isn't sexy. You know, it's not as like, you know, of all the, you know, marketing, the products that are out there that are, high protein, this and, you know, all the different marketing claims and health claims that really seduce people to buy their products. And there's no real marketing budget or advertising for just wholesome vegetables and fruits. Like we just don't have that. So it's hard to, compete with this, you know, the big food companies that are making food products. So yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's always been an uphill battle, but it works. Like we see the results with clients. Like it's something that actually really works if they implement it. So yeah, it's anyways, we're like talking big picture here and like getting on tangent.
True. Yeah.
Totally true.
Oh yeah. Okay. Wow. And then, you know, just another tiny little tangent, and I know your time is valuable because you have two little ones, but because you have two little ones, I was wondering just in terms of helping them to eat some vegetables and fruits. I mean, that's another thing. I do groups with prenatal groups and building better babies and like creating healthy families. So moms with kids, like young kids, and that's something that comes up, like the picky eating and, Johnny doesn't like broccoli or whatever it is. And I'm sure you see that a lot too in your, just with your life stage with being a young mom and a young family with kids. And what are some of your strategies in terms of just, you know, helping kids and families?
Yeah, I see the same. I mean, they're still kids, even though I'm a dietitian, right? They're still not going to love their vegetables quite as much as the rest of the stuff. But all I really try to do is make sure I have one at least for every dinner at night. And then I put a little bit on their plate and like by a little, I started like, so I have a 5 and a 3-year-old, like with my 5-year-old, started like really young, like one piece of broccoli, one carrot. Not like a big portion of it. And lots of times he didn't eat it, like forever. He didn't eat it. He would touch it, poke it, maybe put it in his mouth. But slowly over time, the more they see it, I think, then they start to try it. And if you're eating it with them, they'll eat it. And I think honestly, it's more like exposure where a lot of parents, and I get it because it's tough. And again, it's money. Where you're giving them a serving and they just continually don't eat it and you stop serving it. And then they never get exposure to it, where really it's just like put one piece of broccoli on there, let it expose them over and over and over. And eventually they eat it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Don't give up. Don't give up, moms. Don't do it. Even though you want to pull your hair out sometimes. But
that's the other thing, is the commentary around the dinner table. Like, oh, Johnny doesn't like broccoli. Oh, that's too bad. But no, please. Like, just keep trying it in different ways, like in broccoli soup or with broccoli. And
then when they finally eat it, I read this thing that said when they like finally eat it, you're supposed to like to remain totally calm and like not celebrate it. And that is, it's so hard to do because inside you're like, yes.
Totally. Funny. I know. We're all human.
But
right?
You have to be like, yeah, I know.
I think that I was 23 when I finally ate mushrooms. My mom wasn't even around to celebrate.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's right. Because you were young when they're like, oh, I guess Rob doesn't like eat like mushrooms. And then you just said that to yourself, like, oh, I guess I don't like mushrooms. And so it's kind of like this, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. And really it's setting kids up to, you know, cut out big, important pieces of food out of their diet for the long term. And so, you know, it's good to have more variety, especially vegetables and fruits, and have lots of exposure, like you said. I love that. That's a good, that's a really good kind of picky eating strategy.
Totally. It definitely helps. And small portions, like smaller than you think, like, and then it doesn't feel so wasteful when they don't eat it too.
True.
Sure, that makes sense. We even with our kids when they were young, even like grapefruit was something, because I know it's so bitter and yuck, and then kids started liking it. They were like, oh, this is, they actually liked it. And then other like kind of icky foods, like oysters and like different seafood. We ate that all the time. And then eventually they got a taste for like spicy, like hot sauce. And it's kind of neat to see the kids kind of go through those different phases of like just having the same thing over and over again for weeks. And then, you know, just having bland type foods and just having different food jags over their different years. And then, you know, now, they're young adults and they pretty much eat most things. So it's kind of nice to see that, like, I think, like you said, the exposure is really important. Just like trying different things over and over again.
Yeah, I think so too. And seeing you eat it, right? I mean, that makes a difference too. So you eating your vegetables helps them eventually eat theirs. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, this is great. Well, thank you so much for taking your time. Oh, we didn't ask Rob.
Oh, we have to ask.
Yeah.
That's the most important question. it's more of a curiosity than anything for us and our listeners. We all like to know what dietitians eat, but if you're going to a potluck dinner, what do you bring, or what would you bring? Is there a special plate you usually make? Or
I don't know if I always make it, but I have frequently brought like the cowboy caviar.
Yummy.
Familiar with that? Beans, corn, it has like a lime olive oil like vinaigrette type dressing on it, onion there. You could scoop it with tortilla chips, or you could just eat it plain like by itself.
We're making that like today, cold, Rob. Oh my
a
god,
a cold chili kind of. Awesome. It sounds amazing. I love that kind of stuff.
A little bit, it's good.
There's more particles. It's not like saucy like a chili though, Rob. I don't think. Is it?
It has a little bit of sauce, but not. No, it wouldn't like be like soup like in a bowl.
It wouldn't be dripping off my chin and down my shirt.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
I don't know. It's hilarious. I'm a messy eater sometimes.
I love that cowboy caviar. I'm gonna look that up. So like black beans and corn, and then a nice dressing with and onions, and it's all like you don't cook it, right? It's more like a salsa. Right.
You would put it together, and it's cold. You'd serve it cold. I mean, I guess you could warm it up, but I've always done it cold. And then I like it plain by itself, but you could dip chips, and it's almost a little bit Mexican flavored wise. So it's good.
Sounds like something you'd get in Texas or down south there somewhere.
Yes, it probably originated there. I'm in Michigan, so I don't know how it became my staple, but I do make it frequently, especially in the summertime for barbecues and pool parties and things like that.
Nice.
Oh, that's
oh, that
so
sounds
cool.
amazing.
Oh my gosh. Well, one day when Rob and I go on a road trip around North America and we go back to visit London, Ontario, where we're, our roots are, we will mm-hmm. go through Michigan and we will visit you and then have some of your yeah. cow, like caviar.
Yeah, you'll have to kids. Stop for sure.
With your kids eating yeah. broccoli. We'll be celebrating all
right,
together.
Yes, there you go. Yes. Perfect. Sounds great.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So where can people find you online?
So I'm at thediabetesdietitian.org is my website. You can follow me on social media, Facebook or Instagram at dietitian.diabetes. So a little bit backwards in my website, but yeah.
Perfect. We will put those in the show notes so people can track you down and follow your tips, because it's
yeah, I can send
ideas.
You the recipe yeah. for my cowboy caviar too if you
oh,
want.
Oh yeah, we can post that as well.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
there
that's
you go.
A great idea. Yeah, okay. We'll do that. That'd be awesome. Thank you, Tara. That we really
okay.
appreciate. Is it
yeah.
Tara or Tara? Tara?
Tara.
Tara. Okay.
Tara,
good,
yep.
good.
Tara,
yeah. We have
is.
A few friends with the same name, and one is Tara and one's Tara. So that's why I
you
asked.
Never know.
I know. It does vary. Yeah, you don't know until you ask. Yeah.
It's spelled the same. So mm-hmm. no, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thanks so much for taking your time out today and from your young family and your work and everything you're doing. And I'm glad this worked out for timing.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate all the information that you shared with us.
Good. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care. Well, I sure learned a lot.
I know. Yeah, we even talked about the differences between type 1 and type 2.
That's what
diabetes.
I was gonna, yeah, I was going to say that I've always found diabetes really confusing because of that. You know, there's different and they're very different.
Mhm.
You know, so I'm glad I asked and I'm glad she had a good understandable response. So I'm a bit more educated on that now.
Well, yeah, after 15 years of helping people, I think she's really good at kind of simplifying the message so that it's digestible information.
Exactly. Well, we don't bring just anybody on this podcast. We want people to know what they're talking about.
I love her website, thediabetesdietitian.org. That's great. That's what she is, diabetes dietitian.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, that was really good. I mean, that cowboy caviar sounds so good.
It's like a fancy bean salad, I guess, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a cool, like a salsa type
yeah.
kind of dip, but it's yeah, like a salad.
It's very summery.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely have to bring that one along sometime. It
It'd be good
delicious.
For picnics and yeah, potlucks,
mm-hmm.
summer potluck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Oh, good. Well, I think we all learned a lot in that episode, and that was awesome to have Tara on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so be sure to check her out on her website there that Sandra just mentioned, thediabetesdietitian.org. And then her Facebook and Instagram, she said, is the other way around. It's dietitian.diabetes.
Right.
That's her handle on both Instagram and Facebook. So check her stuff out there.
Yeah, she's got some really good recipes, and she's got some information about her programs and groups, how she helps people online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of stuff going on. So there you go. That is it for this week. You can check out our website as well. It's mywifethedietitian.com. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. That's going like gangbusters. People are loving it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'd like to think they're loving it anyway. You can find the link for that on every page of the website. I think there's a button to sign up for the newsletter. So that's something you can check out. We are also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Another place to listen to the episodes is on YouTube. If that's easier for you to dial in than digging through the old podcast player, it's another option. And while you're on those sites, we love hearing from you. You can rate and review. You can send us a comment. You can even just give us a like. That all helps. We don't need to be in the spotlight for our ego. It's more just to like help our show get recognized and help other people find it. So it feels good too. So give us a like at least if you can. That's super, super awesome. And you want to share with a friend or family member, or like we said, your neighbor or guy down the street or whoever, that's awesome too. The more people listening, the more healthy we can all be. And that is just a win-win.
We appreciate your time listening to the show and that you're sharing this
podcast with others.
Absolutely. So that is it for this week. We will be back on Wednesday with Nutrition Nuggets. And like we said, our newsletter comes out at the end of the week. So if you're interested in that, sign up for that. And if not, we will see you next week with a full episode again. So have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you on Wednesday. Thanks for joining us today on My Wife the Dietitian. If you like what you heard, don't be shy. Leave us a comment or review and be sure to share our podcast with your friends. If you'd like to hear more, hit that subscribe button. You can also follow us on our social media pages for updates, episode trailers, and other odds and ends. For more info and links on what we discussed on today's episode, check the show notes. We'll be back next week with another informative and fun-filled episode.